This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoying. It's our psychiatry series today. If you have a mental health condition like depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, or anything else really, your treatment will not be covered under your medical insurance policy here in Malaysia. So what does this mean for people living with mental health issues? We'll be exploring this with Associate Professor Dr. Amir Sidik bin Amir Nordin, consultant psychiatrist from University Malaya Medical Centre. And joining us today also is Anita Abubakar, President of the Mental Illness Awareness and Support Association, otherwise known as MIASA. If you have any questions or comments, you can call us at 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon, Dr. Amir and Anita. How are you today?
Good. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. I think, Anita, I'd like to start by understanding what is the Mental Illness Awareness and Support Association. Who are you and what do you do?
All right. Okay, thank you very much, Xiaoyik. Thank you very much, Dr. Amir, for being here today as well. Alhamdulillah. So a little bit about MIASA. So MIASA is the Mental Illness Awareness and Support Association. We are a patient-led advocacy group. Basically, we're a mental health NGO where the majority of us in MIASA are mental illness patients. Mm-hmm. But we are very much supported by clinical psychiatrists and also spiritual healers. Right. So the solution that we provide to the public is a holistic solution, not only from the medical standpoint, but also of spirituality. So what we do is we do a lot of awareness works, advocacy works, and also we support patients and also caregivers as well.
All right. Yep. Dr. Amir, you have been talking for a while about the issue of insurance, and this is why we wanted to explore it today. But maybe we just take a couple of steps back and talk about the burden of mental health issues in our society. And we're not just talking about things like major depression. There's also sort of that daily burden of mental health issues that I think maybe everyone struggles with.
Yep. Yeah, so again, thank you very much, Eric, for this opportunity, and also thank you for everyone listening. So I have been discussing a little bit about this on my own podcast, mainly because of the patients that I actually see in my setting who I feel have difficulties in actually obtaining support when they're in need the most. And I think the most important ones are the ones like myself who actually are able to pay for insurance. Mm-hmm. But we realize that when we have a mental health problem, we're unable to find the same support as if when we had a physical health problem. And I felt that this is an issue that is worth at least discussing to see how best can we actually move forward, particularly because this year alone, as we are aware, our neighbors have actually come out with a statement where one of their private insurers actually does support mental health or mental illnesses in particular. I mean, there are not many, there are a few. Probably discuss that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it just made me think a little bit more about why can't we have the same thing in Malaysia?
Mm, yeah. But of course, that does beg the question, are mental health problems significant enough to warrant the need for insurance providers to look at it? If it's a numbers game.
Yep. So again, I do often cite the same number, but 29.2% of Malaysians have some level of mental health issue, according to our National Morbidity Health Survey 2015. And often we're looking at the major mental illnesses or the common ones in Malaysia, which include depression and anxiety per se. And the rest, as we've sometimes discussed, is very small. There are a number of people that don't meet criteria, but who are still struggling with mental health issues, particularly in either big cities or in pockets of society, like, you know, the urban poor, for example, or the very difficult rural areas who might have some level of increased mental health issue. And I think they warrant for those who want and can afford insurance, particularly, I think they warrant the opportunity to be able to obtain and subsequently, of course, to be able to claim should they have a problem.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, insurance obviously links to the issue of cost. How much of a barrier is cost, Anita, when it comes to seeking treatment for mental health problems?
Okay, when we talk about cost, of course, in Malaysia, you know, a person that has mental illness can always walk into a government hospital, for example, and, you know, with, you know, as minimum as 5 ringgit, you can see a psychiatrist and you can also get medication. But having said that, you know, we're talking about a long wait period, you know, and this is something that for a mental illness patient, I think it's more urgent in that sense. So having, you know, insurance coverage for mental illness patients would definitely be a huge plus. And mental illness, really, I just wanted to add on to what Dr. Amri said. Depression is actually ranked by the World Health Organization as the single largest contributor to global disability, and is actually the fourth leading cause of burden of disease. And, you know, we're looking at 7.5% of all years lived with disability, and it's huge. And even if we talk about, let's say, suicide, you know, depression is a huge contributor to suicide. So that in itself tells you that this is a serious problem and we should be addressing it. And like Dr. Emery said, you know, I fully concur where, you know, our neighboring countries, not only Singapore, but Thailand, Indonesia, you know, they too cover mental illness, you know, for their people. So we should be following suit, I hope.
I mean,
yeah.
There, you hear anecdotally people saying that it's very expensive. Setting aside what's available in the public health sector, mm-hmm. If you go private, it's very expensive to get treatment for mental health. But how much of this is just anecdotal? What kind of cost are we talking about?
Do you want to start?
Yeah, I'll just... Okay, for private... See, of course, mental illness patients can go to the private sector. But the thing is, a lot of and many mental illness patients, because of the illness not being treated, when they're in their acute phase of it, they're not able to work. Some of them lose their jobs. You know, you are forced to leave. You get medically boarded out, etc., etc. So then they fall into, let's say, the B40 group, right? If you ask them to go to a private, you know, a private wing, or if they, you know, need to be hospitalized, for example, or even go to a private hospital or a private practice, for example, we're looking at, you know, medication. It could be, you know, 150, could be 300, depending on what type of medication it is. Even for semi-government, if you're talking about Valdoxin or you're talking about Seroquel, it's in the hundreds, really. And imagine that, you know, in a private setting, right, in a private hospital, in that sense. And even for, you know, going for an assessment or even going for therapy, it could range, you know, 250 for 45 minutes to an hour session, which is a lot.
Yeah. Dr. Amir?
Yeah, well, yeah, the cost varies depending on the problem at hand. But I think what's more important is that people have the option to actually be able to access both public and private healthcare. And I think that's where it's important for this discussion to take place, because, you know, there are countries other than ours that actually allow individuals to seek, you know, either or care. And it could be due to things like work, for example. They don't want to, get caught in the long wait in a public setting and come on a weekend, for example, but are unable to actually claim, you know, if they have those insurance. I think in terms of the cost of the treatment, as in other medical problems, the cost of not treating probably is going to be outweighed more than the cost of actually treatment. As Anita had mentioned, depression particularly, we talk about depression a lot because depression is probably the most common mental illness. It's also associated with a number of chronic illnesses as well, diabetes, heart disease, strokes, for example. And for those medical problems, particularly depression, predicts outcome. So if you are treated for your depression, you're more likely to take care of your health a little bit more if you had it at the same time. So to not be able to access those services, really, I think it becomes a negative for the health problem as well. And we know that, for example, in terms of mental health, mental illness particularly, there's this issue of presentism and absentism.
Mm-hmm.
And again, these are non-tangible causes sometimes. You don't really see them obviously there, but they are cost to any organization.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, being able to access this and being able to afford this allows the corporations also to gain a lot of benefits. And I think this is where some of that discussion has been forgotten.
Mm.
And I think that's why it's, at least it's important for us to at least talk about it.
But let's lay the baseline first. Where does mental health currently fit into our insurance picture?
I'm not aware that it, it fits in there at the moment.
So, meaning that there are no mental health conditions covered by any insurance policies?
Right. There's none right now. Yeah. And it's actually very interesting if we look at how insurance companies can cover, for example, critical illnesses, right? Heart disease, cancer, when they are the top two causes of death worldwide, right? And the treatment for mental illness isn't like those two at all. I mean, if we look at heart disease, for example, let's say you got to do a bypass or you got to put a stent in, which costs a lot, or even for cancer, going through chemo or doing radiotherapy, for example. When a person that has mental illness, let's say they're warded, right? You don't get warded all the time, and some patients don't get warded at all. So really, if someone with, already an existing insurance policy were to get mental illness, I don't think it would cost as much as it would other critical illnesses. I think it is more about, not having the awareness, nobody championing it currently. And I think it's also partly because people that have mental illness themselves, we've never really talked about it openly or really discussed it until recently. That's why I think this is a very, very good conversation to have and see what is possible and what can be done about it.
We're talking about insurance coverage for mental health conditions on our psychiatry series today. Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Amir Nordin, consultant psychiatrist, is in the studio, as well as Anita Abubakar, president of the Mental Illness Awareness and Support Association. Dr. Amir, you've been running a poll today to find out how many Malaysians with mental illness have attempted to apply for health insurance. So we'll be looking at the conversation going on over there, and let's see if we can try to unpack that a little bit. So stay tuned for that. It'll be coming up after the break right here on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shaoik. On our psychiatry series today, we are talking about insurance and mental health. Quite a difficult issue here. A lot of people living with mental health conditions are struggling a lot with getting any insurance coverage at all because it simply doesn't exist. We have Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Amir Nordin, Consultant Psychiatrist from University Malaya Medical Centre, and Anita Abubakar, President of MIASA, the Mental Illness Awareness and Support Association. And we'll be going more into it with Anita, just getting you to share the experiences that MIASA has, heard of when it comes to patients trying to either apply for insurance or get compensation or just how they cope with the cost of mental health treatment.
Okay.
But before the break, Dr. Amir, I was mentioning that you'd put up a poll. Maybe you'd like to talk a little bit about that one.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Shaoik. So, in order just to make sure that I wasn't so lost in this conversation, I put a poll this morning. I just wanted to inquire with the public, particularly on Twitter. So this is a Twitter poll that was just put up for about 8 hours, seeking some information from people living with mental illness and their experiences with insurance. And I put up just very simple 3 questions. So the first one is that whether if they had a mental illness and had applied for insurance, and there was a number of people that replied, about 245 people, and 20% of them also said they had tried, and another 20% said that they were they did not try. And there's a lot of people that were not even sure that if they had mental illness that they could even consider that possibility at all. And I think again, this is interesting in itself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, for those individuals who had applied, I also wanted to just have an idea that, if they were, if an individual was diagnosed with mental illness and they had not, had applied for insurance before, once they applied with this new information of this new diagnosis, were they then successful? And again, a third apparently said that they were. But again, this is interesting to me because the people that I meet, most of them, it's going to be a flat no. So I'm quite interested to know how a third of them did
and this is, get that. But this is assuming that they disclosed in their application.
And again, yeah, that could be a possibility. I didn't ask that. I just asked whether, you know, they tried to apply and were they successful in it.
Right.
And of course, the third one was, you know, if they were paying insurance in their lifetime, and then you know, they developed a mental illness along their lifetime, were they then able to use their coverage to cover for the new illness that they actually had? And again, we have got at least about a third saying that yes, they could get through, and two-thirds said they were not able to. So again, this is quite interesting because anecdotally for me, one of the issues that really came to me about this was when I did some private practice in where I practice, and I found out from my patients that they were unable to claim despite the fact they were paying insurance. And this is when I started to be a little bit more interested in these people because their numbers are not small. And I felt that it was a bit odd because they had these are people who are able to pay for insurance, have been paying for a number of years. And then it, by no fault of their own, they developed an illness, which is not a physical illness. It happened to be a mental illness. They happened to see people like myself, and they were unable to claim. And talking to other colleagues, they had similar like patients as well. And then that's when I got a bit interested. Secondly, then I felt that these individuals who I've diagnosed and now decided that they wanted to apply for insurance, you know, I had to write lots of letters for them. And some of them were still, well, most of them, if not all of them, were still unsuccessful to obtain insurance. And again, this got me going and thinking about this. Again, we can't assume that just because you have a mental illness, you're unable to afford these basic life necessities. You know, these people are able, they're, you know, they're bright, they've got good professions, you know, they've got good families. If they wanted to apply and they could afford it, just because they've met me, then they were unable to. And I felt that a little bit upset on that. And that's when my own interest in this area peaked.
But, I mean, the argument could be that when you purchase a policy, you've read the fine print. You know what you can be covered for and what you can't be covered for. So, in the same vein that if you've been diagnosed with, let's say, a rare disease that wouldn't be, that isn't covered in the illnesses, the list of illnesses, you can't go and make a plea to the insurance company to cover you. You know what you signed on for. I'm playing devil's advocate here.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So, you know, what would be the argument to the insurance industry that for them to consider including mental health conditions?
Okay. Firstly, I think coming from an insurance company, right? When we talk about mental illness, first, I think for them, there is no data, right? There is no central registry, you know, saying, you know, these are the X numbers of people with mental illness. These are the X number of people that have mental illness that are not treated, for example. So we don't have those numbers. The other thing with them as well is they don't know how to assess the risk. So there's a lot of uncertainties. And you see, the thing with mental illness is you can't measure, you know, a physical illness, mental illness, like how you measure physical illness, for example, right? So that's also the other thing about it. And I think that if, let's say, for example, like Dr. Ame was saying, because this happens a lot with our patients as well, or the people in Miasa, where, you know, you try very hard, you've got an existing policy, and then, you know, you get diagnosed with another illness, and then you don't get covered for it, when, you know, it has nothing to do with mental illness at all, which really, to me, it's a straight out discrimination, really. Because when you look at the policy, like you mentioned, you know what you signed up for. So you know that despite you having mental illness or you don't have mental illness, you know, no matter what, you you are covered for the 30 plus critical illnesses, right? And I think that more studies need to be done. We really have to have the data in because really, you know, it's unlawful for insurers to deny applications for insurance without having, you know, reasonable and relevant info and data to support their decision as well. So in Malaysia, you know, we often get a lot of complaints as well from not only, you know, the mental illness patients, but I think people that are disabled, that their applications were imposed with higher loading, for example, because, you know, OKUs are considered higher risk in that sense, right? So I think we need to urge insurance companies here to also base their decisions on statistical evidence, not purely on assumptions. So really, everyone needs to work together, you know, the stakeholders, you know, the doctors, especially being the experts, the policymakers, of course, and then people that actually have mental illness, the people with lived experience, for you to further understand it. I think if we have more knowledge, more understanding, then compassion and empathy can come in. If people were to champion, you know, insurance for mental health, people that have mental illnesses, then insurance companies, I think, even coming from a business standpoint, would definitely want to take it on, right?
Dr. Amir, if the insurance industry is looking for data, do we have that?
Well, we do.
Or where are we on that?
I think we do have a number of data. If you're looking from the Ministry of Health, I think there are a number of population-based data that's available from you know, previous registries and also from the National Morbidity and Health Survey that we've done. Various universities, including ours, has a number of information. There was a report that was written, I think, late last year, or was it this year, discussing again about this mental health insurance, where, and I agree with that report, where sometimes, even though the data is available, it was not easy to be obtained readily. And I think this could be one of the limitations. But going back to what you were mentioned just now, you know, about, you know, what would I be expecting from, you know, these people who help people get insurance, is just fairness. You know, it's just being fair that, like I said, it's by no fault of theirs that they have now developed another condition that they are just unable to, you know, to actually cash in, you know, even though they've got an existing policy. Yes, I fully agree that I read through the whole document and I know exactly what are the illnesses and I, you know, I don't want any of them if I can avoid it. And that includes maybe an extra one, you know, like I said, depression is fairly common. It really does go across to many other fields of medical health. But because of that one condition, which with treatment, you know, really improves the other, but I can't get that help. And it really makes it very frustrating and sometimes sad, you know, like they're seeing you and you're wondering whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. And I definitely don't want that for any of my patients, if we, you know, if they could avoid it, and this is why this is so, you know, strongly emotional for me in that sense.
Speaking of, you know, a mental health condition being linked to other coexisting medical conditions, I mean, some of the anecdotes that we hear about, and this could be really down to the bureaucracy of navigating the whole insurance landscape. You know, some of them that we hear about is patients with coexisting chronic diseases, for example, diabetes, losing out on their claims even for the physical diseases when they declare that they have a mental health condition. Have you encountered that?
Personally, for me, not really, to be fair. I haven't actually actually encountered that face to face, but again, anecdotally, I've heard about this happening. I also personally also for most of the people, because I've already come to that point where I know that they won't get insurance, so or they're not insured. So when I discuss at least private healthcare, then it's already with the assumption that they're paying on their own. And if they can't afford it, then public healthcare, I know, is really available, which we can also offer. So for me, no, it has not been an issue. But again, I'm practicing in a very different situation where I've got access to both. But I've heard from my colleagues that there might be some of these difficulties out there.
Anita, what are some of the examples that Miyasa has encountered?
Okay, we have, lots of cases, but we've also had patients where they, have a mental illness and then they, get another illness, for example, and they do get covered for the other illness, but not mental illness. But of course, there's ways around it as well. And I don't think that's right, but I think till we get, mental health covered in our insurance policy, that's probably the way to go for right now.
Where are we when it comes to having that conversation with the insurance providers? I know, of course, groups like MIASA and other groups are, I'm sure, lobbying for it. But, how much of a dent have we made?
Well, from my knowledge, Tan Sri Lee Lam Tai has even brought this up almost 8, if not 10 years ago. And we're still discussing it 2019. Mm-hmm. So, it sort of already speaks volume about where we are. I'm aware from my professional association as well, there are discussions with the insurance agencies. And in last year's Malaysian Congress for Psychological Medicine, which is basically the main conference for psychiatrists and psychological health providers in Malaysia, there was a big forum about this as well. But from my session sitting there listening, I felt that there, it was not as conclusive as I would like it to be. And 1 year later, I've not really seen much dent at all. And that's why I think this narrative or this discussion just needs to be continuous. Because 29.2%, shall we? There's a lot of people out there that are struggling and with a mental health problem. And we know that mental illness is just a fraction of that number. But still, I think they deserve some voice. And I think that's where Anita comes in and her society is really able to hopefully get that message across.
Yeah, what I know currently, what's happening is, of course, like Dr. Mace is talking about the Malaysian Psychiatric Association, they are currently working on a paper and presenting their opinion or their stand from a professional perspective on a few issues when it comes to insurance. But of course, coming from MIASA itself, we've talked about it and we didn't realise that, that there is a lot to do to actually push this through. So, we did a lot of study on it and we realized that in Malaysia, none on mental illness, but on OKUs, yes, like Allianz, Agrobank, they do cover OKU, but they specifically have excluded mental disability as well. And, recently when Tun actually spoke about the My Salam protection scheme for the B40s, we, discussed about maybe, proposing as well to GE and Takaful to include mental health so that at least for the B40s it's covered. Maybe that's a quicker way to go about it, yeah.
And speaking of OKU, we have Chong on the line with a question related to that. Good afternoon, Chong. You have a question?
Hello, Doctor. Good afternoon.
Yes. Hello, hi.
Can a person with a bipolar or schizophrenia apply for a kebajikan OKU card? And can he be considered as a pekerja orang cacat?
All right. Thank you very much for your
Thank
question.
Thank you very much, Chong. That's a really tough question. The second one particularly, I'm not so sure about that one, but definitely for the first one, yes, we have fought hard. My predecessors have, and they've included some mental illnesses within the OKU system. The ones that you've mentioned, schizophrenia and bipolar, both 1% in any population, are included, but on a case-by-case basis. Now, for schizophrenia, we know it's a chronic, severe mental illness, and therefore a large proportion of them will probably be successful in their applications for an OKU card. But bipolar, I'm a little bit reserved. There's going to be probably a third of them that probably will have difficulties in functioning, but a large number of people with bipolar are able to function, and some of them might not want to be applying for the card. But yes, it is in the form that if you have these two conditions, you can talk to your doctor and fill up the form and then go to your nearest kebajikan or the welfare office and see whether you can get that through.
And he was asking also about, whether you qualify as a disabled worker.
I have to admit that I'm not sure about that one, actually. I don't know whether Anita has said about this.
qualify as a disabled worker.
All right, something to look up. About, yeah. But also very quickly, what are the other mental health conditions that would fall under OKU? You said a number.
Well, actually, the two that are written obviously there is bipolar and schizophrenia.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then, of course, it depends on which leaning you are. But certain childhood diseases like ADHD and autism come under that as well. Mm-hmm. Of course, we see those cases, but our colleagues in pediatrics also see those cases. And then you've got some individuals who might not be so keen that it comes under, the mental health category or mental illness category. But it is one of the other categories that one can apply for. Or at least consider to apply for if one, happens to have this problem.
We're talking about insurance and mental health on our psychiatry series today. We have Associate Professor Dr. Amir Sidik bin Amir Nordin, consultant psychiatrist, as well as Anita Abubakar, president of the Mental Illness Awareness and Support Association, MIASA. And if you have questions, you can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet them over at BFM Radio. When we come back, I'd like to look at what's just been announced in Singapore earlier this year, and I think perhaps we can sort of try to understand whether it's a model that we can follow. Would it suit us? Try to unpack a little bit of the nuances of the policy over there, and what we should do moving forward. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon, and welcome back to the show with me, T. Xiao Yik. I have Associate Professor Dr. Amir Sidik bin Amir Nordin, consultant psychiatrist, and Anita Abubakar, president of MIASA, the Mental Illness Awareness and Support Association, in the studio. We're talking about the issue of insurance coverage for mental health, or rather the lack of it currently in Malaysia. Anita, you were talking earlier that it's just about getting that conversation, continuing that conversation, right. Increasing the awareness about how common mental health issues are, especially depression, as we've already said a couple of times in this interview. Yep. One in three people are struggling with it. So there's a clear need for the insurance providers to come in and to support the population with this. But what are the barriers standing in the way of this? Because, Dr. Amir, you said we've been trying to talk about it for at least 10 years. Here we are in 2019, and how much have we moved? What's standing in the way?
Well, first of all, I think definitely the elephant in the room has always been not mentioned. It's going to be stigma. First of all, do you want to be labeled with a mental illness? And I suspect that discussion, of course, has become a little bit better over the years. People are coming a little bit forward now, and there have been a number of people in prominence as well that have at least come out and said that they are struggling, and therefore this allows that discussion to continue. And I think as well, over the last at least 2 years, in my own observation, again, I didn't do a study on this, but my observation is that discussion has been a little bit more more prominent in our day-to-day discussions, and families come forward and people come forward now for treatment. But definitely stigma is going to be one of the barriers of why we're not discussing this a lot. Second is about accessibility. So it's also about knowing where to find help, and we've been doing, the group that I work with, that established mentalhealth.my, has been working in just sharing where people can actually find help. And surprisingly, as late as last year, people were still not sure where they can actually obtain mental health help, whether it's in public or private. Let's not even talk about the discussion we're talking about today, but just trying to access basic help. Yep. They're not sure where can they actually obtain that. And that includes also in obtaining the help from the relevant non-governmental organizations that are out there that do want to help, yet people are not very familiar with them as they're familiar with maybe the National Cancer Society or Malaysian AIDS Council, which is good, but it would be nice to have another few groups that actually champion our cause, that people are more familiar with.
Right.
And that allows people to then be able to create more discussion to the point where we are in at the moment.
And, you know, I also think, following to what Dr. Amri said about stigma is, you know, because of how, you know, the society has been perceiving mental illness, possibly being, you know, people that have mental conditions, being dangerous, violent, crazy and all that. And, you know, this negative stereotype, you know, has persisted through time. And I agree with Dr. Amri, you know, this past 2 years, it's been really good. You know, a lot of patients have been speaking up. And I think that's also creating the awareness and, encouraging the discussion and all that. But, you know, being a patient, I'm a patient myself. And, you know, the thing with patients is also because we, you know, internalize the stigma as well. Mm. Because what happens is, you know, we believe the false stereotypes. And when associated with our condition, and because we believe it, it decreases self-esteem. You know, you feel afraid of talking about it, of asserting your identity. And then because of that, you don't reach out for the help, which is really sad. And then, of course, you know, you don't want to be labeled as such. You don't want to be labeled as, yep, you know, being crazy, dangerous, violent, etc., etc. And really, all in all, is also the lower mental health literacy.
Mm.
You know, even for patients themselves, you know, even when I was struggling with it, you know, the reason why I did not get immediate help was because I didn't know that I was going through it. You know, you know, we don't necessarily have the knowledge when it happens to us, you know, whether, you know, these are the signs, these are the symptoms. And you kind of, you know, think that you can struggle through it and, you know, you can get better. But really, no, you've got to get the treatment. You've got to get the help. And I agree with Dr. Amri as well when we talk about difficulty in accessing services as well. And coming from a patient group, you know, we every single day, really, via social media, emails, you know, people call in, walk into our place, and they really don't know where to go for help, for immediate help. And I think, you know, I really like PPUM, not because you're here, but really because, you know, at PPUM, you can actually walk in Monday to Fridays in the morning session, and you can meet a psychiatrist immediately. And, you know, even in the emergency department, you've got fast track, which is huge for, you know, people that are struggling, that are suicidal, that, you know, or going through a hard time. You know, you can just easily get to the doctor as soon as possible. So I think that's really good. But those are, you know, the bigger barriers right now.
To just quickly just change track slightly, you know, Singapore has one of their private top insurance companies actually launched a policy this year covering five mental health conditions, major depressive disorder, schizophrenia, bipolar, obsessive compulsive disorder, and Tourette syndrome. You know, just from both, from each of you, what can we learn from their experience there? Have they had a similar track record in trying to get this started? And, you know, can we use that as a model?
Well, from my experience talking to my colleagues in Singapore, this journey that they're having is not something that just materialized out of the blue. Yeah?
Yep.
What we've learned this year, at least, is one of the private insurances have actually come out with the with some support for people living with at least five types of mental illnesses. However, within the system, and I think they use an insurance-based system, even the public side, if I'm not mistaken, they've already included mental illness over a number of years. But according to my colleagues in Singapore, it was in stages. And I remember they shared with me that it started initially with depression, as the main mental illness that they would consider covering. And then subsequently, I think it was anxiety. And then after that, it started to evolve. And then this year, I think, which is a game changer for them, from my understanding, is that a private health insurance agency has decided to also support at least five types of mental illnesses. Of course, there's some caveats, but at least it's a start in their market.
Yes. It's huge.
Yep. And you mentioned earlier Thailand and Indonesia also have this. I wasn't aware of that, actually. So, you know, do you think this would be a catalyst for, you know, all of us having this conversation here in Malaysia? You know, how will that help us?
Oh, definitely helps.
Yeah, I think definitely. I mean, having this discussion today itself probably is going to start the discussion going. And I hope that it'll be a positive discussion moving forward. You know, there will be a number of people with a lot of stakes in this field, positive and negative, and I would like that discussion to continue so that there are opportunities that maybe we might also be able to have at least one. Like you said, we talked a lot about depression. You know, at least one, and then maybe we'll see how that goes, and the discussion might move forward from there. But at least we need to start talking about this, and I think the time is right because this discussion. Mental health itself and mental well-being is really a hot topic for our country, because 30% of our people struggling with a mental health problem is not a good thing.
Mm.
We need every support to prevent mental health issues, and those who are struggling, they need all the support they can get, both from the public and the private side.
Yeah. I have an interesting question here on WhatsApp from Zaidi, and I'm only I'm bringing it up because we were talking about mental health conditions coexisting with the chronic conditions that are right. So common in the population today. Zaidi says he had angioplasty last year, and ever since then has been having anxiety attacks, manifesting from this phobia that he will have a heart attack again. And how does he overcome this, Dr. Amir?
Well, thank you very much, Zaidi, for that question. I think the first thing to say is that this is, again, a nice opportunity for us to share that a medical condition can often lead to a mental health condition.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be a frank mental illness, but this definitely comes under our territory. And for Zaidi, the treatment of choice would be doing breathing exercises as one option. And if that doesn't seem to help, probably to get himself assessed.
Okay, and any mental health professional. So it could be, it doesn't have to be a psychiatrist, right?
Well, no, again, if you're finding that you don't want to access people like me directly, you can also access clinical psychologists first. But once these individuals or other mental health care providers, like counselors sometimes, once they feel that the problem is beyond their scope, eventually you will end up seeing people like myself at some point.
Just on a final note, how will insurance coverage, if we, and I'm sure we will, when we eventually reach that point where we get it covered, where we get mental health conditions covered, how is that going to change the way we approach the bigger issue of mental health in society?
Well, I think the inclusion of insurance will speak volumes on a few levels. One is that it would definitely be a win for fairness, because then the whole concept of health, physical, mental, and social well-being will be one full cycle. Because what you're saying now, if you don't include one, is that for some reason you're not taking the mental health component seriously. And I think that discussion allows. Secondly, also, it will also indicate that for some people, they are able to pay for their own mental health care because they're able to, the insurance covers it, and they're able to fund and support that premium. Because when they don't allow it, it's almost like saying that these guys and women are unable to continue their premium. And I think that's, again, not fair. The third is the bigger picture of the acceptance of mental health within our health narrative. And therefore, I'm pretty sure a lot more discussions will be about mental wellness or maintaining mental health, which is happening in the West once they include it in their insurance, because there's a lot more initiative to make sure that people keep healthy.
That's right.
In all aspects.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and I think that's only positive for the country.
Because obviously the whole idea of prevention is to not reach that point where you have such a huge numbers of the population needing to make those claims, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Right. And I also think that, one of the good up things about it is when, insurance companies cover mental health is, now we're acknowledging that mental illness is an illness, like how physical illness is an illness. It's not a weakness.
Mm.
It's not something to be ashamed about. It's definitely not something to be swept under the cup. But, and a lot of time patients have problems, especially, wanting to give their MC to their employer because it's not recognized and they think the patient's making it up, attention seeking, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it will be a huge game changer if it happens because, treatment costs are covered, meds and therapy are costly, and we can't allow people who are less privileged in that sense to be denied their right to health, because, you know, that is everyone's right. And also many patients in their acute phase, as mentioned, you know, can't work at that time, and money is a big concern. So insurance coverage would greatly help to reduce that burden, and it gives the patients the right to recovery, of course. And if less people receive treatment, it definitely means our country's economy and productivity will also suffer, because we lose the workforce. Mm-hmm. So easing their recovery means, you know, they can return to work, which means increased productivity and decreasing the cost. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I've been speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Amir Sidik bin Amir Nordin, Consultant Psychiatrist from University Malaya Medical Center, as well as Anita Abubakar, President of the Mental Illness Awareness and Support Association. Just very quickly, Anita, if you could provide your website or Facebook page where people can look you up.
Sure. You guys can catch us on website. It's www.miasa.org.my. Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, miasa.malaysia.
Okay. You know, as mentioned, they are a patient-led advocacy group, and they can help you out with holistic, and that includes spiritual solutions for managing mental health and wellness.
Yes, and we do a lot of peer support work as well. So, for example, you know, if the guy that just called in, you can also come walk in and talk to us, because a lot of people that have physical conditions come to us as well when they have anxiety and depression, because really, you know, it's like a cancer survivor. You want to go and see a cancer survivor if you have cancer to get the tips. So similarly to Miasa, a lot of patients come in to talk to peers themselves to see, you know, how recovery is possible.
And with so many people living with heart disease and diabetes and cancer now, I'm pretty sure it's more common than not, right?
Yes, it is.
Thank you very much. You've been listening to Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.